open the Senate Revenue Committee. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming. The big bill that we have that most of the people are here for is Senate Bill 720, and we will hear that in about 5 minutes. We're going to move two bills really quickly as soon as we get our fourth member here. And, Senator Corcoran, we're going to move into a work session.
I'm not going anywhere.
Okay.
I'm going over to say hi to my former softball player.
Did we get that on the record?
Let me guess, Senator, did you used to play shortstop on this? Oh, never mind.
I was actually the pitcher, and Pat played in the outfield. And the only bad thing about Pat, besides he got his PhD since then, and he works for community colleges, is that he's a damn L.A. fan.
Dodger.
He's a Dodger fan.
Oh, my goodness.
Boy, look, he's turning red. He's embarrassed. See?
This bill could be in trouble today. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2135. We had this up
slow pitch
Tuesday, and Senator Starr had one amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the dash one amendment to House Bill 2135.
Senator Starr is moving the dash one amendments, which, to refresh our committee, basically just do the a majority of the Secretary of State, the State Treasurer, and the Governor on the, what are those called, the warrant bill.
Right. This is the meltdown bill.
This is the meltdown.
Mr. Chair, what they do is remove the words a majority of, so that it requires three people to
requires certify. Unanimity.
All three of them have to certify if we issued warrants.
Right.
Any objections to the dash warrants?
We don't want to make the audience out there think issuing warrants means that we're coming after them in any way, though. Okay.
That is correct. Any discussion on the dash ones? Any objection? So
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2135 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2135 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any as amended? Any discussion? Any objection? So, Senator Starr?
Okay.
Great. We're trying to get you the record. I'm trying to get you back in first place. Open a work session on...
Does that bill today count that he carried on the floor?
Yeah, I don't know.
Just so the audience knows, our member, Senator Starr, is almost in the lead on carrying bills on the Senate floor, so we're trying to get him back into the lead here of most bills carried on the Senate floor.
But he got one sent to committee today, and we don't know if that counts or not.
I don't know if that counts or not.
Paul will need a warrant,
really?
On that.
A warrant on that.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 223.
Yes, Mr. Chair, to refresh your memory, Senate Bill 223 was sent to the floor from the committee here, and then it was sent back to committee on the idea that some of the provisions of the bill that took out the requirements for local governments from the local budget law that were not an intention that should be carried. The amendment 223-1 puts back or reinserts the requirement for the local governments to do the local budget law and continue sending it to the Department of Revenue in this bill. So this is the amendment that this bill was sent back to committee from.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 223.
Senator Starr has moved the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 223. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move we send Senate Bill 223 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 223 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Gotcha.
Any objection? So ordered. Senator Farrelly, would you be kind
enough? I'll defer that to Senator Starr, Mr. Chair.
We're pulling for you.
Sure.
We're no, bond to have you.
I'll carry Mr. Chairman. I'm just kidding. I'm not sure Senator Starr wants the honor of having carried the most bills.
The most bills in the Senate.
Whatever.
The senator from John Day wants the bill.
He is a rookie after all. That has to count for something.
Thanks. Open a... I don't want to listen to it.
We'll let you know. Wayne County excluded.
Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 720. Mr. Yates.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Richard Yates with Legislative Revenue. Senate Bill 720 deals with essentially providing bonding under Article 11G of the Oregon Constitution for community colleges. It sets a maximum limit, though it's blank in the bill, on the expenditures from the proceeds of both these bonds and the matching. The Section G bonds require a matching general fund revenue source. It sets a limitation on that, and then also in detail sets it for each project at each campus. It authorizes the Board of Education, with the approval of the Treasurer, to issue bonds within these limits in an aggregate amount for this biennium, for the 03-05 biennium, and again, that's blank in the bill. Project approvals and expenditure limitations expire in June 30th, 2009, so you have a period over which these projects are sort of authorized, and then dealing with specific funding during this biennium. It establishes a community college capital construction account within the general fund to consist of a variety of federal, state, and local monies, including transfers from the community college support fund. And this is in the general fund, and this becomes the general fund match. Limits transfers to this account and allows the department to award grants by project. In connection with this, it repeals ORS 341-933, and you have with your material a copy, a Xerox copy of that statute, which prohibits the use of community college support funds for construction of certain types of facilities and requires a substantial local match. So that has been deleted. Establishes the Community College Bond Building Fund to consist in separate funds of monies, sub-funds, of monies realized from the sale of the Article 11G bonds and from the issue of temporary bonds. And it allows the State Board of Education, with the approval of the Treasurer, to issue temporary bonds based on certain expected bond sales under this Act. Limits the amount and maturity of the temporary bonds. Requires the State Board of Education to maintain with the Treasurer a community college bond sinking fund separate and distinct from the general fund to consist of taxes, consist of the required statewide property taxes, should the state have to levy a property tax because these are general obligation bonds, or any money the legislature might appropriate in lieu of the property taxes. And this essentially is what the purpose of this fund is, to pay off the principal and interest on the bonds. It makes technical changes and declares an emergency and takes effect on July 1 of 2003.
Thank you. Ms. Henderson and whoever.
I'm going to bring up a couple of community college folks as well.
There's an amendment, but not exactly that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association, which represents the 17 community colleges in Oregon. We're here today in support of Senate Bill 720, which is a capital construction package for community colleges. We have the Dash 1 amendments, which you have a copy of, and we'll be speaking to the Dash 1 amendments today. For our presentation today, I will speak to some of the background on this capital construction package, and then I have with me three people from community colleges that will speak in greater detail on a couple of representative samples of the projects. Our package contains a project, at least one project, for each community college in Oregon, but rather than go through each project in detail, we thought we'd give you a couple of samples of the type of projects And then if you have specific questions on projects, we do have someone in the audience from each community college, but with the exception of Columbia Gorge Community College, that can answer questions if you have them on their specific projects. I wanted to give you a little bit of background about why we are bringing this package and how the package would work. As you know, community colleges have not had as much general funding to operate our programs as we believe is necessary. In the last legislative session, we were funded from the general fund at $462 million, and in the governor's budget, that's dropped to $407 million. And we wanted to find a way that we could help our community colleges, given these economic times, that would be beneficial to the community colleges. And we believe having this capital construction package would be very helpful to us. By way of a bit of history, most of our colleges were originally built with general obligation bonds that were issued by the state. Many of our colleges were created in the 1960s and 70s, and the legislature between 1961 and 1979 issued a general obligation bonding package for community colleges each legislative session. We have not received any general obligation bonds from the legislature since 1979, and I believe it's time to bring it back to the legislature to do so. Our state statute on community colleges, general guidance is that the state should maintain a policy of substantial state participation in community college construction, and so we'd like to see if this session perhaps we could get some help from the state for our facilities. Many of our colleges that have come either created since 1979 or have annexed large areas since 1979 did not have access to general obligation bonds from the state and would find that very beneficial in order to offer services to their students. Our capital construction package, the total package is a $319 million capital construction package. They're Article 11G general obligation bonds. And the way the general obligation bonds work is that it requires a dollar-for-dollar match from each community college. So half of that money would be raised locally. And what we're actually asking for in bonds is $159 million. The debt service on this would be approximately between $11 and $13 million each year, starting in the 05-06 year, depending on the interest rate that the bonds are issued at. The projects themselves are a variety of different projects. As I mentioned, each college has a particular project or two. There was not a specific funding formula that was used in coming up with the amounts. Each college did a local process to determine which projects that they would like to have funded and what the amounts would be based on their what their local needs were and their ability to raise matching dollars. And so you'll see in the list of projects a variety of different dollar amounts because it is based on that local need. And you will see the process that we use to come up with the projects. After each college came up with their local needs, they sent their first 3 to 4 priority projects to the State Board of Education, who then use the criteria that you have before you to take a look at the projects and rank the projects. The first tier of projects, one project from each community college, and the second tier projects are what you see represented in this package. And so then the bottom, the third and fourth tier projects are not represented in this package, but wanted to rank the projects based on a criteria which the State Board of Education has adopted an administrative rule. In terms of the projects themselves, we have a list here by college of the variety of different projects. As you can see, it is a varying dollar amount and varying amount of projects by each college. Projects are widely dispersed throughout the state. If you look at our next slide, it shows a map of Oregon with the dollar amounts for each college so that you can see the impact that it will have across the state. And I would mention that some of the larger projects are east of the mountains because of the particular needs of those community colleges, which we believe will also be an economic benefit to those communities as those colleges go forward with their construction projects. We have taken a variety of different projects and divided into three categories, and we have someone to speak to each of the categories to give you an example of the different types of projects. And the three categories that we have are new campus projects, and these are for those colleges, as I mentioned before, that were either created or have annexed large areas since the last time they received general obligation bonds from the state. And we have with us today Rick Levine, who's the president of Rural Community College, who has one of those projects, to talk in detail about his project. The second category of projects that we have are construction of professional technical buildings that we believe will be beneficial and that those programs train people for family wage jobs. And we have with us today Joe Johnson, who's the president of Clackamas Community College, to talk about their project in specifically. And then our third area that we have are the remodel or creation of additional classroom space. And Craig Smith, who's the vice president from Chemeketa, will be here to talk to those categories of projects. And then, as I mentioned before, we do have someone from each college to answer questions you may have. With that, I'll turn it over to Rick Levine, who will talk about new campus projects.
Thank you, Andrea. Chairman Deckard, members of the committee, my name is Richard Levine. I'm the president at Broad Community College in Southern Oregon. It's a privilege to be in front of you to talk a little bit about what we think is a major issue for community colleges. I was wondering. I'm going to talk mostly about Broad Community College, but I want to make sure that you understand that there are other colleges who are in need of new campuses. There are either colleges who are in very antiquated buildings such as Clatsop, or colleges such as Columbia Gorge, Klamath, Oregon Coast, and Tillamook Bay, who have never had a college campus. And all of their facilities are leased facilities that they use to offer their classes, to offer all of their technical programs. That's also true of Rogue Community College. In the late 90s, Rogue Community College annexed Jackson County to its district. Jackson County has a population of about 175,000 people. Josephine County, the original district, had 70,000 people and has a campus situated in just outside of Grants Pass. For the last 7 years, Rogue Community College has leased facilities in downtown Medford, close to 100,000 square feet of space at a cost to the district of about $1.4 million a year for leasehold and leasehold improvements. One of the issues for us is how long the college keeps investing public money into private buildings. Let me give you an example of what that means for us. We initially went into a building that had an assessed value of about $250,000. The building was remodeled. We paid for that remodeling. The building currently has an assessed value of $1.4 million. That's an assessed value to the private landowner, not to the college and not to the public. One of the issues for Rogue Community College is because of that large population in Jackson County, we have seen our enrollment double during this annexation period, starting in the late 90s. We have now 12,000 students who are Jackson County residents that are going to school in facilities that, very frankly, are inadequate for educational services. If you look at other community colleges, that 12,000 student body, that's Jackson County student body, would grow to 17,000 in about 5 years. Typically, community college students represent 1 out of 10 people within their district. That basically means 1 out of 10 people are taking a community college class during a year. And that pretty much holds true for each district. So with a population of 175,000, we can expect to see 17,000 people at Rogue. Most of our classrooms at this point seat between 20 and 25 students. With the way the budget has been for the last year and will be for the future, those are inadequate classrooms in order to get the greatest economies of scale that we need for our teaching faculty. What we've done is put together a plan that's involved a number of external partners in determining what our facility needs might be and what they should look like and where the best location would be. And I'd just like to mention some of the partners that have been involved in that planning. The City of Medford, the mayor has been very gracious and helped us with that planning. Jackson County, county commissioners have been involved. Central Point and Eagle Point school district personnel have been involved in talking to us about how we would build facilities that might be shared for both the high schools and the community college. Southern Oregon Public Television has a partnership with the college and is looking to partner with within that building or sets of buildings. Jackson County Fire Department, Sante Hospital, Providence Hospital, and Ashland Hospital have all worked with us to try to determine what an urban campus in Medford and Jackson County might look like. And what we've put together is a complex that would sit in downtown Medford that would be able to house students in a variety of different programs from our developmental studies program all the way through to our allied health programs, including nursing. We would look towards bonding for our particular match for this project. We have gone out twice to the taxpayers in Jackson County. We did pass a bond in May. Unfortunately, we didn't hit the double majority, but we had a majority of the people who did vote for that bond and would have passed had we had about 3% more people turning out to vote. We did go out again in November, and that wasn't as successful in the general election that we thought it would be, but it wasn't. So our intent is to match that dollar for dollar.
Mr. Levine,
yes.
What was the percentage? That was actually the question that I was going to ask originally. In the November election, so you went out to try to bond for, would it have been the entirety of the package that you're asking the state or half that?
Chairman Decker, members of the committee, the college went out for $40 million bond levy.
40.
And that was before there was any proposal to bring any dollars, to get dollars from the state of Oregon. So it was to pay for the entire facility. It was a 25-cent per thousand levy. And as I mentioned, it was passed the first time and it was defeated the second time.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to know the percentages of that?
No, that's less important than, I guess the philosophical question that one might ask on this is it the state's responsibility, or in some ways are we sending the wrong message maybe to those voters, the ones that from May till November, some of them that you might have lost along the way, is the state by acting upon this afternoon in any way sending a message to those voters that a no vote might represent state action?
Well, Chairman Dickert, I would believe that the reason we lost that election was probably because of the five special sessions, the uncertainty of what was happening at the state level, the downturn in the economy, and basically people's reluctance to look at any new taxes. I think if this committee passed this bill and it was passed through the legislature, it actually helps to know that your dollars are being matched when you go out for bond levy. I've been involved with several bond levies at Rogue and at Chemeketa Community College, and people do take a look at the fact that the state is going ahead and matching those dollars, and look favorably upon being able to put up their fair share of those dollars.
Senator Hannah.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I certainly appreciate your questions there, and I think it's very appropriate that we discuss this. However, as Rick Levine has said, part of the uncertainty is the economics at the time. We have a high unemployment rate, close to 8.5%. And people in straight economic times, when it's difficult, have a tendency to reject large expenses. There was a very serious effort made to pass this bonding measure. And I think this bill, 720, doesn't reward you for voting no. It rewards you for voting yes, because half of the money is going to have to be paid for at the local level by bonding or fundraising at the local level. So this bill in no way rewards those no voters to come forward. This rewards the yes voters to come forward and say, yes, this is part of our community. Yes, this is something we want. Up until just recently, a few years ago, Jackson County was the largest urban area without a community college in the entire state of Oregon. And so it's something that, as Dr. Levine said, we have to work on. We have to build upon. And I think he's showing leadership in that direction to build the confidence of the voters that they will do this. But I'd like to take you back about 29 years ago, when I first came to this legislative process. Community colleges were told at the time, don't worry, you'll have the state support. You'll always have the state looking forward to helping out community colleges. And after Measure 5, we began to tone off in that level of support for community colleges in exchange for back funding and filling the larger obligation that we had for K through 12. And as we did so, we began to erode that support for community colleges. So there's a larger picture to what we're looking at here, and I think we need to look at some of the history that community colleges were told at the time, don't worry, we'll support you, and we have not followed through with that support.
Thank you. Senator
Ferriola. Mr. Chairman, just to echo the comments of the good senator from Ashland, in some cases these are promises kept. Just for an example, the Hood River Center, which is being contemplated for Columbia Gorge Community College as a remote center, was part of the package that voters voted on. The issue was to allow the community college to extend and annex new territory. And as part of that agreement with voters, we dedicated, or at least at the time indicated, there would be a local facility in the Hood River community that was to be run by Columbia Gorge Community College. This represents promises kept in some cases to voters. So I think it's important that we put your question in context. It sends a very positive message and, in fact, keeps credibility with voters that we, in fact, would authorize these expenditures.
Chairperson Deckard, I'm not sure I want to continue after that. I think that was a wonderful endorsement, and I might just pass it on to our next speaker. I do have one comment to make to Senator Corcoran. Don't hold this against us, but I'm a Dodger fan too. But I'm a Brooklyn Dodger fan, and I stopped being a Dodger fan when Sandy Koufax retired.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Barely.
Hello, Senator Deckard. Good to see you again. Chair Deckard and members of the committee, I am Joe Johnson, the president of Clackamas Community College, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the professional technical buildings. And just to give you a quick summary of those that are contained within the list is one at Clackamas, which I'll speak to, a project at Central Oregon that's a science and allied health building, at Lynn Benton, a science building renovation. Now, Mount Hood, new construction and related remodeling at Southwestern Oregon Science and Technology Building, at Southwestern Oregon a culinary arts facility, a Treasure Valley and Agriculture and Technology Building, and a project at Portland Community College to improve public service educational and instructional facilities. I might lead off because you may find it of interest that by mentioning that Clackamas Community College was one of the two districts in the state that was successful in passing a bond issue, as was Portland Community College, and I might speak to that because it may be helpful in understanding the problems we face. At Clackamas, we did a comprehensive master plan and study of our needs in the campus, looking at everything from parking to the need for new facilities and the renovation of the existing facilities, and then simply the updating and upkeep of our buildings. And the figures came in the $80 to $100 million range to really do a campus and provide for expansion and all the renovation that's necessary. We realized that simply wasn't possible in terms of a local bond issue, and we had to trim our project back to some $57 million. And we're trying to upgrade our facilities, we're trying to redo our infrastructure, and we're trying to expand our campus. And, of course, what we find is there simply aren't enough dollars to meet all the needs that are available. And we've identified this project as one additional project that we would complete, which is our professional technical building that would house automotive and auto body. And they're currently in facilities that serve about 140 students with a waiting list of literally 50% of capacity, and because of the waiting list, there are over 70 to 80 students. And we might point out to you, this is not only a project that impacts the community college, but we do this in conjunction with the high school, so that the state, in effect, gets dual benefits from this. And I might point out one of the wonderful things about the community college construction bond is the fact that it doesn't necessarily translate solely into tax increases, and that is for every dollar invested by the state, we come up with another dollar, but not in all cases are those tax dollars. For example, in our case, We built a facility in Wilsonville. 50% of the dollars for those came from the partners that invested in that facility with us. We did a family resource center. We raised 100% of the dollars for that facility. We did an apprenticeship building. One-third came from the college, one-third came from labor that was donated, one-third came from the apprenticeship councils themselves. So community colleges are very innovative in the way that they approach these projects and have a number of means of doing them. And we might mention something that's going on in our state right now, and that is we're certainly in a holding pattern with regard to enrollment in the sense that we've all had to increase tuition and the state has had to limit the resources it can put into higher education. But in a professional technical program, and especially in the allied health areas, we have enormous enrollment pressures. We at Clackamas are looking at bringing a new building online that will be an allied health facility, and we're already asking ourselves what we're going to do about the fact when we open the brand new facilities, we're going to be too short two allied health labs in the anatomy and physiology area, simply from the demand in the urban area. And this is true for community colleges all over the state as they try to look in the allied health field and ask themselves from nursing to dental hygiene to all the various professions how they respond to the demand that's already out there. And literally in an area like dental hygiene, a person could go to a two-year degree program and start with a salary that's in the $35,000-plus range. And where else can you invest the minimal amount of money you have to invest in a two-year program and see that kind of return and immediate tax dollars that flow back into the state? We think that the technical areas and the buildings are necessary in terms of the growth we're going to face in meeting the demand we already have. You take a place like Central Oregon that already is running from dawn till dusk in terms of their labs being utilized. That's the case with many of us in both our labs and in our technical programs. And we're seeing with employers and other things still in need in terms of professional training. Just to take the automotive area, for example, it's really funny because yesterday I was in our facility that we're in and I was talking with one of the students. And at my age, all the students look so very young, and this one young man was there, and I was talking to him, and I asked him if he worked, and he was in our program, and he said he hadn't graduated, and I said, what do you found in terms of employment? And he said, I have 3 job offers. He said, I'm working at one of them. I'm going to move to one because it's closer to home. And I said, well, what do you make? And he said, well, I make $13 an hour, but he said, of course, I haven't graduated yet. So there, even in this economy that we talk about in some of these areas, there is demand. There is growing demand. It's during a period of recession that we should be building our infrastructure so that we're able to address the areas of prosperity when there is growth. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm Craig Smith, Vice President and Chief Financial Officer at Chemeketa Community College. It's a pleasure to be here with you this afternoon. And I'm going to speak on the category that we have here of new classrooms and remodel projects. The colleges that we're speaking for are very varied. There's no uniform college. Some of the colleges were built in the 60s and 70s. Basically, within a couple of years, the entire campuses grew up. Other colleges have been built over time over the last 20 or 30 years. And others are brand new colleges that basically have no facilities. So we're all a little bit different, but we all have certain things in common that we do need. We are going to continue to grow. We do have facilities that are not adequate to meet our current needs and are very costly to continue to operate. And we do have facilities that we could, by changing the facilities around, gain some economies in terms of economies of scale and how we provide our programs. I'm going to speak about 2 programs at Chemeketa, but there's a list here you'll see that fit it within those different categories. At Chemeketa, one of the things we're asking for is help with the McMinnville campus. We've had a McMinnville campus for some period of time. Using the name campus is somewhat misleading. It is modulars parked on top of daylight basements that we put on a hillside. And that has served us for some period of time, but those modulars were used when we put them there 20 years ago. There are no elevators to get from the first to the second floor. There's no covered steps even to get from the first to the second floor of those buildings. The classrooms were all small because at the time that was a small community, and we didn't have large classrooms there. But it is now one of the fastest growing communities in the state, and we have a lot of demand for our services in that area. You might ask, well, how can we continue to add new students? I think we have no option. As you've heard, there are jobs that exist out there. We're telling people that you can't find a job unless you have an education. At the same time, we have many jobs that are opening that we're trying, that people are recruiting our students for before they're even through the programs. We have a lot of people that are retirement age and in professions that we train for, in police and fire, paramedics, nursing. The demand for the jobs is going to be there. The students are there wanting to train for those positions also. We have to have the spaces for them to do that. So we will continue to have the need for those new classrooms in almost all the areas of the state. Another project at Chemeket is to build another classroom building on the main campus in Salem. We have modulars that were we picked up basically as junk 30 years ago that they had supposedly been used up their useful life. We've used them for the past 30 years. As you can imagine, they're not the most energy efficient way of providing space. They take an incredible amount of maintenance. They leak. If you bump a chair into the wall, it might go through the wall. It takes a lot of our operating money to keep those modulars going. We also, they can only fit so many students in a modular. We don't have a lot of the ability to get a lot of the technology to those modulars. If we do, it's a very expensive proposition to include the technology that we now need to have in many of our classrooms. As when those were put there 30 years ago, law enforcement. Basically, you would sit in front of a talking head. You didn't have any of the techniques, the shoot, don't shoot, any of those types of technology. The nursing, you didn't have all the machines. We had a demonstration of some of the new machines at our last board meeting that they can hook you up to various things. It'll print out. It'll send the recordings to the hospitals. The doctors will be able to set up and be ready to treat you the minute you arrive. But again, we need to have the rooms and the technology that complements that to be able to use those things. So this category would number one, it would allow us to continue to serve our students. It would allow us to serve our students better with modern technology, and it would save us operating money so that we can apply that money to serving those new students. And I can read the list here for you, but I think you've got the list in front of you. There's some very worthy projects here, and I think unless you have any questions, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. Questions? Comments? Thank you very much. Are you staying with us, Andrea?
I think we've got some other people that are signed up to testify.
Yeah, Mr. I'm going to miss this. I'm just going to say Jason. Is it Jason? Jordan. Oberhaus. Mr. Oberhaus.
They didn't teach German at the U of O?
I'm somewhat German. Is there a Mr. Oberhaus?
You've offended him now. He doesn't want to come out.
Okay. Lori Wimmer Whalen, Mr. Wagner, Mr. Williams. C3. There we go.
Ooh, you know where these guys are from? Yeah. They're from labor.
Yeah, that's right.
Ooh.
We're all here. I haven't fallen asleep yet in the back of the room.
Want to start?
Sure. Go for it. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, Lori Wimmer Whalen representing Oregon Education Association. We represent not only K-12 but also community college faculty and classified. And we're here in support of Senate Bill 720 because we believe that this is an integral piece of the educational infrastructure that contributes to economic recovery in Oregon, to the creation of jobs, training for jobs, and, of course, access and opportunity for students. Got fans in the back there. We also would like to address the fact that while we're aware that there is an issue around debt service, it won't come into play until we understand the 05-07 biennium. It's rather minimal. We supported a similar bonding package for K-12, and so with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but we believe that this would be a worthy project for your consideration.
Thanks. And I'll be brief as well. Rob Wagner with the American Federation of Teachers, Oregon. We represent faculty and classified at Portland Community College, Southwestern Oregon Community College, Columbia Gorge Community College, the faculty at Oregon Coast Community College, and the classified at Lane CC. I'll be brief, not to echo testimony already provided, but we are very much in support of Senate Bill 720 for three reasons. First of all, faculty and staff morale. I was out at Oregon Coast Community meeting with our faculty out there just a few weeks ago, and they've never had a permanent campus. They were extremely excited about the prospect of actually having a building in which to teach. Secondly, it's an economic development tool, and some of the arguments previously stated, worker retraining, et cetera, I think this is such a value-added service. And then also just in a time of profound underfunding of community colleges, we really feel this is one very positive step forward in attracting quality staff and faculty to support the value-added services that Oregon Community Colleges provide to citizens around the state. And again, I'd be glad to answer any questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, David Williams, Oregon School Employees. We represent classified school employees in four community colleges, Blue Mountain, Clatsop, Central Oregon, and Rogue Community College, and we additionally represent the adult basic ed instructors at Central Oregon Community College. And ditto to what's been said, jobs, economic development, infrastructure support, all that good stuff.
Great. Thank you. I know Mr. Wagner's a big Cubs fan. We didn't get sticking with the
team. It's the M's, but it's my wife's fault. You know,
if any community college really wants to be favored in this room, all you have to say is Giants.
Yeah. Oh, there it is.
Ah, there we go, Mr. Williams, the winner. All right.
Over the bay.
I saw a number of hands go up.
Thanks.
Great. I think that's all we have. Anyone else on Senate Bill 720? Mr. Oberhaus obviously is not with us.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
I do have one comment about this. If we can't afford this particular bill, I think we ought to emulate those good people at the University of Oregon and just go to outdoor schools.
Outdoor schools.
No? Okay, never mind.
Well, bring an amendment.
Okay.
Thank you very much for coming. We have all seen public opinion surveys which let us know that community colleges are the service that routinely rank first in terms of services that the state delivers to the public. They always rank first in any survey that I have seen. So appreciate you bringing this bill to us and appreciate all the work that y'all do. With that, we will close the hearing on Senate Bill 720 and open a hearing on Senate Bill 874.
Giants. Not giants.
No.
Giants.
No, it's not Giants. G-I-A-N-T-S.
Are we done? Can we go home now?
Good time. Hey, Ryan.
Yes, sir.
You asked me about that. Typically on something like that, it goes to the opposite house and then goes to Ways and Means.
You run it through a chamber.
Yeah. WM means Ways and Means. Uh-huh. That's what I had written on there for you.
Yeah, yeah.
But because it's a referral to the voters, it goes to the other house and then it goes Ways and Means, and then they look at the voting cause and what the teacher bonding indebtedness is.
Huh. So we'll run it out of the Senate.
Hello, Harvey. How are you? Good. Good to see you.
Retread.
Well, good. Good to see you. Yeah. 874.
From one, this is my guy now. Yes. He's down at Umpqua. But it's nice that you two old retreads know each other.
Well, he helped create our institution.
I did. Create the problem.
Yeah, and then left.
Yeah.
Thanks, Harvey.
So we're in a public hearing on Senate Bill 874. Mazin, what does this bill do? And I should say, for starters, that I scheduled this really to keep the idea alive. We have several folks that are working on different bills related to incentives for renewables and wanted to keep this one in play. Mr. Malik.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this
This bill, Senate Bill 874, attempts to do a number of things. First and foremost of all is exempting the wind turbines which generate electricity from property taxation. And the second attempt of the bill is to replace that property taxes by imposing what's known as the electricity output tax on the electricity generated by the wind turbine. And then it goes into distributing the electricity output tax money to local governments, counties, and applies the exemption of the tax on July 1st, 2004. And I have to mention here, just because of the way the bill is structured, as and at this time it has both the exemption and the imposition of the new tax, that it, as it stands, it might have some issues on where the tax being imposed and where it works on the Senate side rather than the House side. And I have to also bring to the attention that there is a House bill, 3610, that attempts to do the same thing. It's a mirror image. Now, to go into the particulars of the bill, the wind turbines today are considered property, that they are taxed accordingly as property tax. However, the valuation of the property is figured for the most part on one of two ways. It's either done on cash flow, or it will be done on cost, and accordingly that valuation comes into the tax stream. If not enough years have elapsed to make a determination about this cash flow of the this utility, then the most likely candidate for the valuation would be cost. At this time in the state of Oregon, as we know, there are about four wind power projects that qualify for this or become under this law or this bill. Their valuation is about $140 million altogether. Only one of them had had enough time to produce long enough to find any cash flow, and accordingly that would have what makes it at this time a little difficult to get into whether this bill is in the revenue neutrality arena or not, since we don't know the amounts that are of electricity being generated. Also, it is important to bring to mind that ORS 308805 allows the public utility co-ops to choose taxation on gross earning in lieu of property tax at about 4%. This is not the same thing, although it comes into a closer version of that version of taxation than the property tax. However, also the bill starts treating the output and taxing the output at a certain rate of kilowatt per hours. That's 2 cents per kilowatt per hour. Whether that is enough to make it neutral or not, unknown. However, it also takes the arena of administering the tax from the format of the property tax into the income tax format. And in that sense, it will bring a certain amount of fiscal impact both on the state, because this is in the arena of the Department of Revenue of the centrally assessed properties, as well as it might have this certain fiscal impacts on the counties. However, that has not been determined to which extent the fiscal impact does. And the bill, in also builds a skeleton, I believe, of how these taxes are collected, distributed, and the penalties and fines and so on. And that's what I have been.
Thank you. Appreciate the orientation. Mr. Kosasan.
Mr. Chair, Richard Kosasan, representing Lifeline Renewable Energy, Inc. And the reason for the bill, very simply, is an attempt to incentivize the generation development of wind power within the state of Oregon. Nothing more, nothing less. This, the in lieu of property tax concept, has been tried in other states. I think the most recent was the state of Minnesota, which moved to an in lieu of property tax at the same rate. The problem and the reason and the rationale for the movement, very simply, would be to once again provide an incentive. The capitalized costs for the development of wind generation is extremely expensive up front. And if the tax liability is placed on a straight ad valorem property tax base, it hinders the financial viability of the project. Lifeline, along with a group in the eastern part of the state, is currently considering the development of a 100-megawatt project in Morrow County. My understanding is that Morrow County approved the conditional land use permit last Thursday evening. So they are very serious about the development. It is, again, a 100-megawatt plant or a program. They anticipate 40 to 70 wind turbines. The 100 megawatts, in terms of a general perspective, could take care of the electrical needs for about 60,000 homes in the state of Oregon. In terms of development, they anticipate a 6 to 8, perhaps 10-month period for development, covering about 7,700 acres in Morrow County. Now, that's for all the turbines combined. In terms of just the footprint of the turbines and associated roads and maintenance facilities, you're talking a total footprint of about 18 acres, which is kind of astronomical in terms of the disparity. That, I think, is really the highlight. It is an attempt to provide some incentives. We started the bill in the Senate, and after we started the bill, the Legislative Council determined that it was a revenue-raising measure and should start in the House. So last week we moved and secured the introduction of a House bill, and that's House Bill 3610 through the House Rules Committee. This is our intent was a starting point for discussion, and that's it. And I think in light of council's consideration and direction, we at least get started in the House.
Mm-hmm. And so, Mr. Kosasan, is there anything else that we should know about as a committee? As we, I know that there's at least groups working on this. Senator Farrelly has a bill with Judge MacArthur, at least in the same realm. And I know I've spoken with the governor's office about a statewide policy that we might at least contemplate on incentives for renewable projects. And if you want to update us as a committee.
And Mr. Chair, the intent, again, of the legislation before you is to provide a statewide policy to truly address the underlying problem. And that problem is that because of the capitalized cost, because of the ad valorem property tax, you don't have the incentive for development. If we can straighten that problem out, I think you would see a great deal of attention given to the development of wind generation. and I don't have all the specifics yet, Mr. Chair, and I regret that. This kind of popped up on the schedule rather quickly. But it's been my understanding that some of the facilities that we have in Oregon right now have received some type of tax benefit in the past to start to get them up and operational. And that's been on a local level. And to me, the bill, again, would straighten out or try to address and develop a state system to really take care of the underlying tax problem. Is that
perfect? Questions? Thank you. Mr. Higbee, anyone else would like to testify on this bill? Mr. Higbee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Brad Higbee on behalf of the Renewable Northwest Project, which is a four-state regional organization made up of wind developers and environmental and civic organizations. Very intrigued by the concept brought forward by Mr. Kosasanen of Client Lifeline. Appreciate the opportunity to remark briefly on the need to provide some fashion of incentive to encourage the development of renewable energy in the state of Oregon. There has been some progress. We believe there could be a good deal more, which could mean a lot, not only for the state's economy, but for many of the rural areas of the state that happen to have the luxury of the wind resources available to them. So that is a benefit in terms of not only the jobs for building the wind developments, but tax revenues to local governments, as well as the payments that are made through leases to the farmers and ranchers upon whose land the wind turbines are planted, which on average can range between, well, not on average, which can range between $2,500 to $5,000 per year per turbine. Fairly significant shot in the arm for some of the struggling areas of the state. We think that's one of the incredible important side benefits of this. I'm not certain if this concept as provided in this particular bill or the matching bill 3610 is the best way to go, but I think at the very least we're greatly encouraged by your interest in this and the committee's and the committee members' interest in trying to build some sort of a consensus for a policy that works. We would like to see an approach that would include local government in a creative way so that they're perfectly happy with everything that's moving forward, since ultimately the local governments will be the ones asked to approve the location of and green light the ultimate developments. We want to make sure that there's an effective partnership there.
Mm-hmm.
With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions and would love to be able to work with you all in the future.
Yeah. It seems to me that the process we use with the Strategic Investment Program, the SIP, is one that might be at least in some ways replicable in this arena, where it really did marry those two with projects that we'd like to bring to the stage.
And Mr. Chair, that could be one of several approaches that would make a great deal of sense. I know that at least one of the projects that Mr. Kosasan referenced was the, without naming it, the wind facility that was developed in Condon that benefited from the creation of an enterprise zone,
mm-hmm.
providing a temporary tax abatement. They worked very cooperatively with the county commissioners to get the thing going and establish the program, which will mean a fairly significant increase in the local tax revenues once the abatement period has elapsed.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, I don't recall if it's a 3-year or 5-year, but that was instrumental in getting the project in the ground and going. And as Mr. Kosasan referenced, it's incredibly expensive, a very capital-intensive effort to get the thing going.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've got it up and running, the wind resources, if adequately projected, are essentially free.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the incredible cost of getting the thing in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Anyone else? House Bill, Senate Bill 874. Close the public hearing. Adjourn Senate revenue. Thank you.